Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. In this hour, we'll be hearing from NPR senior editor and Washington desk correspondent, Ron Elving. Last month, we heard his lecture asking, "How deep is our commitment to democracy?" The lecture was followed by a Q&A with the audience, and that is what we are presenting to you now. Have you ever had any questions you'd ask Ron Elving if you could? The audience for his lecture took full advantage, and there will be a variety of topics discussed. We'll begin with Ron Elving answering an audience member's question about our use of electronic devices. This was a fun reminder that in addition to being a well-known NPR voice, Ron Elving is also a professor. Enjoy the show.
The power that these things, you know, where is mine? Is it here? Yes, it's here. Oh, thank God. The power that these things have is astonishing. You know, there are very few things that I would go back for after, you know, having left them somewhere, and I have to have this. So the kids are the same way. What you have to do in a classroom situation, and I assume teachers do this generally, I mean, I certainly do. I mean, if you go to a theater, somebody on the screen berates you until you shut down your telephone. If you go to a concert, nowadays people have all learned to shut down their phones. And I just see no reason why you wouldn't do the same thing in a classroom. Just say, you got to put it away. You got to put it away. And that's, you know, a little more difficult with a laptop if they're trying to take notes, but there are ways of dealing with that too. I just tell my students, if you want to take notes on your laptop, that's fine. Send me the notes. At the end of class. And, you know, it's funny, those laptops come right down. So I totally agree with you. The students have moved on to a very high level of technological communication, and we have to catch up. We totally have to catch up to the natives. They show me how to do everything, and then I tell them they can't do it. Yes.
Hi, my name is Angela Mapes Turner. Like a lot of people here, I'll stand up. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thanks. Actually, like several people here, I think that I know I'm a former newspaper reporter. Luckily, one who left on my own terms. But I'm just curious to hear your thoughts a little bit more on how do we restore trust in the media? How do we reach people who aren't reaching out to listen to NPR or find credible media sources? And thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you. This is obviously not just a question of marketing. This is almost more of a question of, I won't call it evangelism, but it is a question of trying to introduce to people at some stage. And it can be when they're very young, or it can be at any stage of their life, to the idea that there is something different that isn't trying to sell them something. All right, I'll grant you we're trying to sell you some kind of support for ourselves, but we're not trying to sell you products. We're not shouting that you should be somewhere on Sunday. We give you a little release, a little relief, a little surcease from that kind of media experience. And if people, you know, through word of mouth discover it, they tend to stick around. We had a big spike. Our listenership for public radio in general, when I started at NPR in the 90s, was about 10 million people. It's now 30. Now, is that because we got so much better, et cetera, et cetera? No. It's all basically the same. But people came to it for reasons that had nothing to do with us. For example, they came for the Florida recount coverage, all 35 days of it. And that was an enormous spike in our listenership because people just got addicted to it and they saw that there was information there that they weren't necessarily getting someplace else. And while it came down after that, it didn't come all the way back down. So it wasn't a perfect spike. It was more like it went up and then it came down and then it plateaued. And then again with the Iraq War, first 9/11, it was a huge spike, of course. Everyone was addicted to the news. And then with the Iraq War, there was another spike. And each time after that energy sort of dissipated a little bit, it would come down, but there would be a new plateau. And that also is true. Another big, big boost was 2008. A lot of interest in that campaign. And then, of course, as we all know, 2016 completely preoccupied the country. And turned everybody into, you know, some sort of news junkie, and we have not come back down from those high numbers yet either. So to some degree, when there is a lot of news, when a lot of different options are out there, the word can circulate. And we do let our people appear on television and do other media to some degree. Don't like them to spend all their time doing it, but we do let them do it because that visibility helps us. And people who see Mara Liasson on Fox, for example, will go, she didn't seem so unreasonable. She might be okay. And we have people who show up just about anywhere and everywhere. And that, I think, helps people then get an impression that they think maybe they would want to get a little bit more information about that. But ultimately, I think it's trying to get into the schools, trying to have people tell their friends what they listen to, and get the word out that way.
Hi, Elizabeth Anderson from Northwest Ohio. So we want to get a plug in for Ohio here. But I was wondering what your thoughts are on the current state of education, general public education in the country, because I've always suspected that when we got away from education for educating people, teaching them how to think, and this emphasis on teaching them how to work, that is the function of education, that has had a detrimental impact on people being invested in the democracy. Hmm. If your only view is to earn, as opposed to be involved in your community. And then there's also a second follow-up. There's always been a saying that governments are supported by their people, be it passively or actively. And do you think that in this age, we're going to get some active participation back again?
Great questions. About the students, I think my observation, and this is a very small sample, just one teacher in one school, but my observation is that the good students, the best students, are better than ever, that they know more, they have more sophistication, they have been exposed to more, they've in some cases traveled. American University is a little odd because it's in Washington, D.C., so obviously we're attracting people who have a higher degree of interest in the government. Half of them want to be the government. I had a class a few years ago in a brief experiment in Honors College, and I asked them if any of them had ever been interested in running for political office. Well, they all raised their hands. So that's nuts. That's not, you never see that in normal life. The less sanguine part of that is that the average student, the more typical student, that person is probably, I think, less well prepared for college, has not done as much writing, has lived a life of screens. And while there's a lot of writing involved in the screen life, I'm not sure they're all using it that way, right? It's mostly passive. And they're very willing to sit there and just listen to you, which is nice in a way, but not nice in an educational way. They have to push back. I actually had a student say to me, first day of class last week, a student said to me, after I had been doing what professors do, he raised his hand and he said, "Do you want us to express our opinions?" And I just had to laugh. I said, "No, I don't. I require you to express your opinions." And as it turned out, he had quite a few. And he was very, very good at explaining them and knew a great deal. So that's what I mean about the standouts. The standouts really stand out. I wish that I had a sense. And I don't mean this as a criticism of our system. I mean it's a criticism of our culture. I wish I had a sense that they had been made to write a little more, think a little more critically, decide between opposing points of view, decide between arguments well made, that sort of thing. And sure, I mean, that's part of education, and I'm not asking them to have it before they come into the education system. But to some degree, it needs to start earlier than the university level. And that I do hope for. Now, your second question was about activism and whether we're moving into an era of greater activism. I think that's true. I think I really see a lot more people getting interested in a negative sort of way, mostly, angry about the system. And in a sense, that's the beginning of a new engagement and activity. And while some of it is hard to deal with, and some of it, I mean, for example, Charlottesville, if you will, that was activism. Pretty ugly, and then the resistance to it, and the people who came out to fight the white nationalists and Nazis, And, you know, one thing I must say about Charlottesville is, after having watched people express opinions for 30 or 40 years, it was, in a brackish sort of way, different, and I wouldn't call it refreshing, but bracing, to see people be outright about it, carry a torch, carry a swastika, you know, chant Nazi slogans. Wow. It was kind of a punch in the nose. My first newspaper was in Milwaukee, and we had a little Nazi party there in the 1970s. We covered everything there. Did most heavily covered political party in history. But of course, everything was kind of more subterranean. And so that was it was a brackish experience. It was a bad thing. But that is a form of activism, and it does show that people are getting upset and angry, as we talked about. And some of that anger is going to be very ugly. Some of it's going to be violent. But that is part of the re-engagement from the pacifism that you talked about. And we're going to have some of that, I think, as a price to pay for the pacifism. And we're going to have to deal with it in the ways that a culture must deal with activists that go out of line, that get over the rails. Culture has to push back at some point and say, you can't do that. You can't be violent. We have to figure out a way for the police to handle it better. By the way, the same group came to Washington this summer and tried to do it again. The police there are what you would call experienced. And they basically surrounded both groups. They kept them apart. There was no clash. It was nowhere near as large a group. Everybody was ready for it. So, you know, it can be dealt with in what I would call enlightened, but stern and firm ways.
WBOI Presents will return after a short break. Thank you for listening to 89.1 WBOI.
This is Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR News. Why is public radio important to our democracy? It is important that we in the United States do not all go to our own convenient corners and live in our own bubbles, selecting our own favorite facts. We need to all be part of the same conversation, a conversation that welcomes everyone, and a conversation to which everyone has access. Stand with democracy and public radio. Show your support by making a contribution at wboi.org.